Thank you, James. Exxon personnel are filtering in. The cameras and lights are coming back on. We expect the Exxon 11 o'clock morning briefing to begin in just a moment. Again, we just had the NTSB briefing, and at 12 o'clock, we have an environmentalist press conference scheduled. They're talking about cars being parked illegally now. The driver of a black Tempo with license plate, whatever, whatever. We will be underway in a moment with the Exxon conference. Again, the revelations at the last conference that the third mate had been on duty longer than he was supposed to, that the Coast Guard warrant officer who arrived on board the Exxon Valdez between 2 and 2:30 a.m. detected alcohol, a smell of alcohol on the captain's breath, evidently. The fact that there was an alcohol blood test kit on board the vessel, but that this information was not made available to any of the investigators on board, and the blood tests were not administered until the state was able to get a blood test kit on board 7 hours after the Coast Guard warrant officer first noted alcohol on the captain's breath. Nonetheless, both the pilot who was dropped off the boat and also the warrant officer from the Coast Guard did indicate that the captain seemed alert and capable. That was from the NTSB conference coming up. A note that the NOAA conference that had been rescheduled for tonight at 8 has been canceled again and moved until tomorrow night. Elsewhere in the day, after the environment's press conference, we may have a break unless the U.S. Transportation Secretary does get to town and does do a conference. For listeners who've been straining to hear the questions, we have been doing our best to get microphones out there. We could use another volunteer or two for listeners in the Valdez area. If you're a supporter of KCHU and have the time to help out, we need people who don't mind being in front of the world on camera to run microphones out to the people who are asking the questions. So we could use a couple of people up here. And for the 11 o'clock conference and the 12 o'clock conference, if you'd like to help, please call KCHU at 835-4665 and let Donna or James know you can help. And when we get enough people, they'll let me know. So we would ask for the help of listeners or volunteers who'd like to help out with public radio coverage of this event. We have been informed that at the request of some of our listeners and the press corps that the Exxon spokesman who will be conducting this conference will try to repeat or clarify questions. So even if we're unable to get a microphone over to the person posing the question, we'll hopefully have some idea of what question is being answered by the spokesman. We will be continuing again to provide coverage of all of these briefings and press events as they occur, and appreciate the patience of listeners with some of the technical problems we've experienced. Last night, during the lengthy Cordova Town meeting, we had a couple of disconnects. We're able to get the conference reconnected, but only after quite a period of frustration. Also, that was a teleconference circuit line with a lot of microphone gating and such, difficult to hear. Hopefully we'll be able to maintain a better technical quality if there are any further meetings in Cordova that we're able to broadcast. We'll certainly make every attempt to provide a cleaner feed in the future. Tankers are operating in and out of Valdez. This morning, Governor Cooper indicated that he felt that was premature. From the Civic Center ballroom, we can see right across the Port Valdez to the tanker terminal, there are tankers loading now. Don Cornett of Exxon is beginning the conference. You'll hear him next.
Radio stations are broadcasting this live, and they can't hear the questions, so I will attempt to repeat the questions as I understand them. If I forget to do that, remind me, please. The lightering operation, which we still consider to be one of the two most critical tasks, is going extremely well. 390,000 barrels will have been transferred from the Exxon Valdez to the Exxon Baton Rouge at noon today, Alaska time. This represents about 39% of the oil on board. The Exxon Baton Rouge will be fully loaded, and will depart around midnight tonight. The Exxon San Francisco is expected to begin loading early Thursday. It is expected that lightering of the Exxon Valdez will be completed by Friday evening. Dr. Ronald Goodman, a remote sensing expert, has conducted 3 flyovers since Tuesday to assist in tracking the oil. The total area of the spill will be calculated from this data. The information has been used to determine boom deployment areas and to survey environmentally sensitive areas. Booming and, excuse me.
Don Cornett of Exxon is the speaker.
Booming and skimming activities are continuing and being expanded. Booms are in place at Main Bay and Ashami Bay. Attempts are underway to boom in the Evans Island area. These are priority areas where sensitive fish hatcheries are located, as was described yesterday. The total number of skimmers currently in use is 13. Two large Navy skimmers are expected to be deployed in the near future, and additional skimmers are in various states of readiness. These will be deployed at key locations. It's my understanding that we now have out there, either in the water or on boats, to be deployed about 26,000 feet of boom. Two loads of dispersants of 5,500 gallons each were sprayed in Prince William Sound proper yesterday. Exxon has requested permission to spray in two Zone 3 areas today and tomorrow. Attempts to burn at Eleanor Island yesterday were unsuccessful. The oil was too heavily emulsified to ignite. By Wednesday afternoon, Exxon expects to have hired about 300 local workers, including about 200 from VECO and 100 from NORCON, to conduct the cleanup effort. The need for additional workers is being assessed. We have people into Tiklik today, and we have people going to Cordova to work with the Fishermen's Union there. We got a call this morning. They said they have a lot of people who want to work, and we're sending one of the people in charge of employing the workers over there, and he should be there today. Beach cleanup is expected to focus on Eleanor Island, Ingot Island, and Bligh Island. Efforts now are directed toward additional skimming in these areas prior to beginning the physical cleanup activities. We're trying to get as much of the free oil off while it's still in the water, and that reduces the amount that has to be picked up off the shore. I understand there is another press conference scheduled by the DEC at noon in here, so I will take your questions now. And let me also introduce Mr. Chuck O'Donnell. He is the terminal superintendent for the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company. I know you had a lot of questions yesterday, and he is here today to answer your questions about the terminal. Let's take this gentleman right here first. I'll try to do this orderly, but I'm going to repeat his question.
Said several things that later turned out not to be the case.
For instance?
For instance, the small things such as the 20 birds that were washed and then not washed. We went out in the Associated Press plane and looked everywhere for these skimmers that had been deployed. We found no skimmers. You had suggested yesterday that these workers were being deployed to these islands. What we've been able to determine is that the hiring had hardly begun yesterday, that there were no deployments of workers to anywhere. And I have to ask you, with all due respect, why is your information inaccurate? Are you not being given proper information?
I'll try to repeat that question so for the benefit of the radio audience. In short, it's that I have been giving you improper information on the number of skimmers and the number of employees that we have put them.
Yesterday. Where were they exactly?
I have a gentleman here from the Operations Command Center. My information is good. I don't know how good your reconnaissance is, but we had a discussion about skimmers yesterday, and the person who raised the question thought all the skimmers would be boats. They're not all boats. Skimmers come in different shapes. But my position is, if I tell you there are 13 skimmers out there working, that's information I get from the command center, and I stand by it. It's good information.
Mr. Porter.
Well, just one second. Dan, do you want to add anything to that?
I can't tell you exactly where they were yesterday, but they were out there as we had indicated to you.
What is a skimmer other than a boat?
Sometimes it's something that looks like a funnel with a hose going in, coming out, you drop it into the oil inside a boom.
But is it attached to something?
It's attached to two hoses going back to a pump that's on a barge or a boat or something.
So there has to be a boat there?
There does have to be some. If you're close to shore, there doesn't have to be a boat. You can be pumping it into a bag.
When you say 13 distinct skimmers, are you saying there might be two or three of these distinct skimmers on one vessel?
Sure.
I see. Okay. Can you tell us, of those 13 skimmers you say you have, how many vessels are involved?
No, I don't have that information.
Because when we hear 13 skimmers, we see 13 objects working at different locations, mm-hmm. where you may be describing the fact that we have 13 skimmers on one boat, which doesn't sound like that's a whole lot.
Okay, well, may we handle the skimmer question by me bringing a map tonight and some pictures of what skimmers, what you should look for when you're skimmer searching, and a map of where they all are.
Thank you.
Now, I want this business of, my whole purpose here is to give you the facts. I am not here to bamboozle you or kid you about anything. If I give you wrong information, like I did on the birds, that was given to me by the bird people. When I get it corrected, I'll give you the correct information. I am not going to mislead you.
Mr. Cornett, in your list of statistical progress so far of the cleanup, you did not give, at least I didn't hear it, the total number of barrels of oil that have so far been cleaned up. Do you have that figure?
I have been giving it, and you're right, it's not in this report. Let me see if we have it. Do you have the total? It was 3,500 yesterday morning.
The latest I had on it was a little less than 4,000.
Okay, let's go make a phone call and get that number from the command center, and I'll give it to you before we leave.
If you have 4,000 barrels of oil, if that is an accurate figure, that seems like a very small number of barrels of oil. Is it fair to say at this point the cleanup is going badly?
No, I think the cleanup is going very well. It takes a while to get deployed and get everything working, but yet I understand that yesterday was the best day that we've had.
And Mr. Cornett, you have oil. You have oil now that is supposedly out of a flat pancake shape in the broad expanse of Prince William Sound. It's gone over to the islands, Knight Island, Naked Island, Smith Island. It's getting into the bays and estuaries now, according to the state fish and game people. You're the only one still saying that the cleanup is possible. Everybody else is saying that the best they can do is a defensive measure, island by island and bay by bay. I mean, why is there such a wide difference between your message, Exxon's message, and everybody else's message?
When the DEC comes in today and shows you where this effort is going on, their defensive measures are a part of the operation. You always do defensive measures. One of the first things you do is identify the sensitive areas and try to protect those. But at the same time, you operate the skimmers and you deploy the booms, and those go on concurrently.
We're in defensive areas. I mean, that's where the booms are being deployed.
Where the oil is, and we can't start working on the beach until the oil gets there. There's still free oil on the surface. We have a request for two sprayings today. We sprayed yesterday, free oil on the surface, and we have 300 people that we have hired to put out there, and they're on the three islands that I told you about.
But what were they doing? What were those
people doing yesterday? I understand that a boatload of people went out from here yesterday, and all they did was sit on the boat all day, and they didn't do anything. So what are those people doing?
Those people are hired to go out and remove oil from the beach and string booms and operate skimmers. And that is what they are doing.
The people in the Glacier Queen yesterday, to a person, said they couldn't make any comment. They got in around nightfall, as you predicted. You said that you would tell us today what they'd been doing. Exactly what did the workers on the Glacier Queen do yesterday?
I haven't any idea. We have numerous boats up.
You promised us yesterday that everyone would report back late last night, and today you'd be able to tell us exactly what people had been doing.
That was what my report was. That is the summary of the effort that took place yesterday of those 300 people and the people on board the tanker removing the oil.
Well, can we find out specifically what the people on the Glacier Queen did yesterday?
Yes, I'll find that out for you.
Could we get an accurate figure on the total number of barrels that has been cleaned up? You said you speculated at 4,000, but you said somebody should go make a phone call.
Yes. Just one minute. I'm falling behind on repeating your questions. I don't think the radio people are hearing what kind of questions you're trying to
answer. How do you feel about the stability of the vessel at this time? Is it your contention that we should probably be able to get the oil unloaded without any further damage here in the oil department?
We feel that very important job is going very well.
Is there any southeast wind forecasted here in the next few days that may change the direction of the open ocean swell, which would make a disadvantage for the operation?
We don't have any weather forecast at this time that would interfere with the lightering. I don't know what the direction the wind's going to be. but we anticipate having all the oil out of that ship by the end of the day Friday.
Yes, the DEC said that the window for dispersants is really closed. If you're going to go to Zone 3, the most sensitive areas, where are those two areas and why are you doing it if it's really not going to be effective?
I'm not sure where they are. I just know that they're in Zone 3. If we didn't feel it would be effective, we wouldn't have made the application, and if they don't approve it, we won't do it.
Can you tell us more about your use of dispersants yesterday and today and how much oil was treated or cleaned up, if that's the right term to use for dispersants?
Well, they were treating the oil that was coming from the area of the ship, and they dropped 1,100 gallons. Is that gallon or barrel? 1,100 gallons in the area. Downstream of the ship.
In the area in Zone 1? And
yes.
And what was the effect?
But it was effective, was what I reported.
Can you tell us more about that? I mean, did the slick sink, or in that area where the dispersants were dropped?
Well, it doesn't sink. It breaks it up into little pieces and sort of dissolves in the water and disperses. It is not a sinking agent. It doesn't push it down to the bottom. Breaks it up into little droplets that allows the bacterial action to get at it, and it does appear to be gone once the dispersant is on there.
That is what happened when
that's the report that I had. Yes, it was effective.
But this is an attack on oil that recently came off the ship, not from the main ship.
I assume so. It's still in the neighborhood of the ship.
Why did Exxon choose to construct the tanker Valdez with a single layer hull rather than a double layer hull as most of its predecessors were? And do you think that would have made a difference in the damage or the extent of this spill in this case?
I could speculate on it, but I think it would be better to ask Mr. Iarossi, because I think that was his decision, and I'm sure he'll give you an answer to it. I am not a naval architect. I don't know. He'll be here this evening.
How much spillage has there been during the transfer between the two tankers?
There was an incident reported early on when they thought they had a piping system set up that would allow them to pump the oil from all the port tanks. And evidently there was damage to a line. And as soon as they started trying to pump with the ship's pumps, they did get some oil in the water, and they stopped that and went to a different process.
For example, has there been any more, in the last 24 hours, any more spillage?
There's oil seeping from the ship. It is very limited. Yes, sir.
Sir, I have a question that follows on from a prior press conference here this morning. Apparently there was an alcohol testing kit aboard the Valdez. Is there any company regulation which requires that kit to be used in the event of a major incident?
I don't know. We have a policy, and have had for years and years, of not allowing any alcohol on board our ships. I'm not aware that there's a kit on there. I'm not aware. Maybe Dan knows the answer to that question. It's his department. Do you have any regulations or company regulations that require use of that kit after an accident? But it's there for that purpose if you want to use it.
Yeah, if it's probable cause.
Can you give any explanation of why it wasn't used in this incident?
The question is, why was the kit not used?
Yes. Later on, some people figured that there was a need for a test. If there was a kit there, why was it not used? Why was no mention made of it to authorities who boarded the vessel within hours?
The kit we have on board for use by the vessel personnel is a urinalysis kit, and they are instructed not to use that without permission from our Houston office or headquarters operations. There are a number of ways that we have for determining the intoxication level, even including observation, and those are the kinds of decisions that were made at the time, would be made at the time. As it turns out, as I understand it, there were authorities on board shortly after the accident occurred taking their own test.
And my understanding is those tests were quite a long time after. Was any communication made with your Houston headquarters about the use of that kit?
No.
Ken, is it unusual to have only one person on board a tanker like that with a Coast Guard endorsement to navigate in the Sound? You had only one officer endorsed. I was wondering if that's unusual or not. It's not unusual.
You just need one.
What if he had a heart attack?
Okay.
Since oil is still seeping from the ship, have you put the boom back that blew away?
Yes, that was put back yesterday.
Why wasn't the oil that leaked out of the ship cleaned up inside the boom? When the boom blew away, there was all that oil that was allowed to be released.
Let me see if I understand the question.
there was a boom around the ship, and there was oil inside the boom. The wind blew the boom away, and it released the oil that was inside the boom.
And as the oil collects in the boom that has been replaced, it will be removed with skimmers.
When was that boom replaced? We flew over that over the tanker about 6 p.m. yesterday, and the boom had not been replaced yet. You just told me it was replaced yesterday. When did that take place?
Yeah, I was told it was replaced yesterday, about the time I had the morning press conference.
There was a long plume of oil coming off the bow at dusk last night, and this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. Are you not getting the information, or why?
I am giving you the information that I am given by the people who are reporting from the field.
Well, what we're trying to establish, sir, is that apparently you are not getting the accurate information that we're required to give our readers and viewers. That's what we're trying to say. There seems to be, between every press conference...
Believe me, it's a bigger concern to me than it is to you. So give me a chance to find out if I am giving you information on these details that I'm not witnessing myself that is inaccurate.
You said today that you've deployed booms, etc., at one of the islands. You haven't deployed them, right? You've provided them to this mosquito fleet. They call themselves a fisherman from Cordova. They're doing the deploying, correct?
They're doing part of it, but we also have a lot of other people out there doing that also.
With what boats? Whose boats? I mean, what fleet of boats are you using?
We hired a lot of the boats from Valdez when we came in. There are Coast Guard boats, there are state boats, there's a large number of boats out there. Just 1 second, let me see. The answer to the question of how much has been cleaned up was between 5,000 and 6,000 barrels at this moment.
How long will it take to clean that up at that rate?
It will take a long time.
We're talking a year, 2 years?
No, we're talking several months, I think.
According to that figure you just gave us, you're doing anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 barrels a day. At that rate, 240,000 barrels, we're looking at a little amount of time. Is it safe to say that this spill has effectively gotten away from you, as the various state officials and fishermen who have been out in it have said?
First of all, when you spill 240,000 barrels, you don't ever expect to pick up 240,000 barrels. As you know, if you have been out there, a good deal of that evaporates.
What he's trying to ask you is terms
well,
of
let's let him ask his question and you ask your questions, okay?
Well, we'd like
Thank
the
you.
Answer.
I'm doing my best.
Okay.
So a good deal of it dissolves in the water. And the longer it stays on the water, the more of it is biodegraded. We will never get back 240,000 barrels of oil. We don't expect to. But I can tell you, when you take 1,000 barrels of oil out of the water, you've taken a lot of coastline damage away. So we're going to continue to work on the oil that's on the water and get what we can. And then we will take that off the shoreline that hits the shoreline.
Well, let's be realistic. How much do you think you can get off the water?
We will get it all off the water, or we'll get it off the shoreline. And that depends on the weather, and it depends on whether the skimmers are working well and how many people we have out there, and all those things that impact actually sucking oil off the surface of the water.
How much of that figure that you gave us was oil produced with dispersants? I'm just trying to break it down. You said 4,000 to 6,000 barrels. How much?
The dispersed oil is not counted in there. This is oil that we have picked up out of the water and have contained and will reprocess somewhere.
Since your latest burn failed, does that mean you'll not be doing any more burning?
No, I think we will continue to try.
I heard the burn test failed because the torch broke, not because the oil was too thin.
Well, I was standing in the Aero helicopter place last night when the people came back, and what I heard them saying was it's moose, and there's no need trying it again in that location.
But what happened to the lake?
Because of the condition of the oil.
Yes.
As opposed to an equipment failure.
Moose is oil that's mixed with water, and it's too wet to burn.
What does that do to the evaporation rates?
I think the evaporation is about over when it turns to moose. But moose is ugly, but it's very easy to get up once you can get a shovel under it.
Alyeska answer the criticism from government officials here that they were deceived about Alyeska's cleanup plan, that they're never having an adequate contingency plan, they're never having adequate supplies available, that basically they were deceived all along. You've had a lot of government officials say this in the last couple of days. Could you, the gentleman from Alyeska, respond to that, please?
And the barge that was under repair?
Let's try to have one question at a time, and you know, don't throw all the questions at him at one time. Ask him one question at a time, and I'm sure you're happy to respond to it. Joe?
Can you tell me your question?
Yes, it's O-D-O-N-N-E-L-L.
What's your name, sir?
I'm the terminal superintendent for Alyeska Pipeline Service.
And that's Joe?
Charles.
Charles. Someone can't answer this question, but I would really like to hear from you, Mr. Cornett, what kind of contingency plan, or what is your contingency plan should the lightering operation fail, should the boat shift, more oil be spilled, the tanker break up for some reason, the extreme tides we have coming up? What do you have in place as a contingency plan? Do you have booms, added booms ready? Do you have resources there? Or are we going to get caught once more like we did in the initial phase of this thing? I just want to hear, what are all those plans that you guys have in terms of the contingency that the lightering should fail, the ship should somehow crack open, list over, fall apart? What is your contingency plan specifically, in detail? Yes.
The contingency plan is a plan that was put together by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company and approved by the government. That is the plan that we are operating under now. I'm coming back to the future. I think we have every intention, as we always do when we have something go wrong, to review that plan, and I'm sure that there are many people in the government who will review that plan, and I expect that there will be modifications made to the plan from the lessons that we learn from this, not from the hysteria, but from the real lessons that we learn. And if the plan is still adequate, that will be the plan.
I want to know the details of the plan that you have.
Would you like to read the plan?
No, not the general contingency plan. A contingency plan for what if the lightering does not work? What if the tank...
Can you handle another spill right now?
Are you going to get caught with your pants down once more? Are you going to... Or do you have something in place? So if your lightering, all your projections don't work out, more oil is spilled, perhaps more than's already been spilled. What are you going to do about it? We want to know what you're doing in terms of looking towards the future and in terms of this eventuality.
What would we do if this something happened to the ship and worsened this spill, or a spill from some other source occurred at this time?
Contingency plans for this. Not off the top of your head what you would do. You have some contingency plans in place. Have you thought ahead? What you're going to do? What are the steps that you've outlined?
We will never be in better shape to take oil off Prince William Sound than we are today. We've got equipment from all over the world in Prince William Sound right now.
So what we can say is more of the same, basically, if an accident like that were to happen.
If something happens to this ship, we will respond with the equipment that we have there and any other equipment that we can bring in, and respond very much like we have responded to this one.
Another spill, but you want the terminal to be active again with more tankers coming in, and you can't handle it?
We are picking up this spill. We are handling it.
Because if you had another spill, you'd have to take away equipment from this spill.
Well, this spill has pretty much blown out of Prince William Sound onto the...
But now we want to open the terminal again.
Is the terminal operating in compliance with Coast Guard regulations right now? Mr. O'Donnell, is the terminal in compliance at this moment with Coast Guard regulations for oil spill at the terminal?
Yes, sir, we are.
The barge is there.
With Coast Guard representatives and also with the state representatives, a contingency plan for reopening the terminal. We have additional boom. No, the barge, the decision was made to keep it on station where it is with the Exxon cleanup effort.
So in other words, you've got a waiver.
We have additional skimming equipment that is now located at the terminal in response to the Exxon spill. Additional equipment was brought in.
Was the minimum required equipment specified in the plan available when this first spill occurred? The right amount of booms, the right amount of skimmers for 200,000?
That's correct.
Oil spill was available?
Prince William Sound, oil spill contingency plan. All the equipment that was required for that 200,000 barrel scenario was on site at the terminal and was functioning.
How many feet of boom did you have on site, and how many skimmers did you have on site Friday and Saturday before all this other stuff was brought in? In other words, how much of a spill were you able to handle just right there on site?
We had all of our equipment that was specified in the Prince William Sound contingency plan.
How many feet of boom is that?
Right at 22,000 feet.
Do you believe anything you're saying? You've lied to them before in the past. The contingency plan didn't work. How do we know you even have a contingency plan? How do we know we can trust you in what you're saying?
All I can tell you is that the equipment that was required for that contingency plan, that scenario of 200,000, was indeed at the terminal.
Is that plan realistic? Is that plan realistic at all?
I'd have to say at this point, with the experience that we have on this particular spill, that a lot of effort's going to be going into looking at that and see if that plan is a good one.
Can you be more specific? A lot of
we had a drill last May, for example. It was a desktop drill. In fact, it was held right here in this location that involved state and federal agencies, also the local government from the city of Valdez. And this such scenario, 200,000 barrels, was drilled.
Does the plan actually contemplate what amount of equipment is required for a 200,000 barrel spill?
Yes, sir, it does.
Under what kind of weather conditions?
I'm not 5 or 15 knot winds. I think it was like 4 foot seas. And
so how many days for the length of time necessary for a response?
I'm sorry, sir. I don't.
15 knot winds throughout the whole response period?
Yes, I believe that's.
So how much boom did you have?
I think it was right at 22,000 feet that was dispatched from the terminal.
Mr. O'Donnell, with regard to the barge.
Yes, here in Valdez. And then. Yes, I believe that's.
So how much boom did you have?
I think it was right at 22,000 feet that was dispatched from the terminal.
Mr. O'Donnell, with regard to the barge.
Yes, here in Valdez. And then we immediately.
20,000 on hand.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Why wasn't it deployed then immediately?
Well, the first thing that happened throughout the course is this event was developing, and the Coast Guard and the DEC personnel arrived on scene at the Exxon Valdez. Their first request was for a tug to stand by to assist the vessel because of the safety of the crew and the safety of the vessel on Bligh Reef. So we immediately dispatched our rescue tug, which is the Stalwart. See, the call was call into the operations control center came in at about 0028 hours, and the tug was dispatched at 0034. And it was the tug Stalwart. It's a 9,000 horsepower tug. In fact, it is still at the scene. Okay, then at that point in time, once the DEC representative and the Coast Guard representatives arrived on scene at the Exxon Valdez, their priorities were still concerned with the safety of the vessel and the safety of the crew. It was apparent to them that they'd have a sudden release of crude oil that was already starting to spread on the surface of Prince William Sound. They were still concerned, again, about the vessel, so they asked us at that point to dispatch a second tug, which we began to do, and then the priorities were changed, again, based upon the information that was being gathered by the representatives at the scene of the Exxon Valdez. It became apparent that we had a potential to release another million barrels of crude oil, so we were requested to immediately expedite the dispatch of lightering equipment to begin the process of offloading the Exxon Valdez. So at that point in time, logistical people, both here in Valdez and in Anchorage, began immediately trying to find out where additional barges and things of this nature were. We set in motion to request tankers of opportunity that were coming into the Valdez vessel traffic system to use as lightering vessels. The Exxon Baton Rouge, which actually came alongside, we started communicating with that vessel to determine what was needed. I'm up to about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Second tug was dispatched at what time?
The second tug actually began leaving the terminal at about 1 o'clock. It was quickly turned around when the Coast Guard people came on scene and determined that lightering equipment was needed. It was determined at that point in time that the most expeditious manner to deliver that equipment out would be by the tug, because it had the best speed capabilities plus the working space on the aft deck to be able to deploy this equipment. So at that point, that's what we started to do, was to we had some of this equipment that we were in the process. I'm up to about 3 o'clock in the morning, that was going onto the barge. We had to take it off the barge and put it on the tug sea flyer to be able to respond in a quicker.
When did she leave then?
I'm not sure the exact time, sir. It was, we went aboard other vessels that were at the terminal at that time. There was two. The Coast Guard did not know at that point in time, based upon what was happening with the Valdez, as to whether it would be a side-by-side lightering operation. In other words, what we have right now is the two fenders in between the two vessels with two tug boats holding the Exxon Baton Rouge in place. There was some concern at one point in time that we may have to be well back away from the location, and the Coast Guard was going to advise that, so we went through the efforts of taking all the lightering hose that we had at the terminal, plus what was on the two vessels that were at the terminal. We made an immediate call to one of the Valdez, Del Welch, and we asked if he could take a boat that he had, which was a landing craft, at Two Moon Bay, and if he could dispatch that up to the tankers that were coming into the system and going to anchor at Knoll's Head to get additional lightering hose off of those particular vessels that were into the anchorage area at the time. And with the idea, again, that we didn't know whether we would have to stand off with the Baton Rouge in this lightering operation, you know, half mile, mile, or what. So we started in motion the procurement of all that lightering hose because we just weren't sure what was going to happen.
The reason you might have wanted to stand off was because you were afraid the Baton Rouge would be too close to the reef?
That's correct. It was the information at the time was that they weren't sure exactly where the Exxon Valdez was on the reef itself. So they weren't, at that point, sure just how close they could bring the Baton Rouge.
You said the people on board told you about the lightering, but in part of your plan that you rehearsed last year, wouldn't you immediately take 22,000 feet of boom out there to the site and not wait for someone else to tell you to bring it?
Well, that's exactly it. That boom was ashore in connexes. We had a total of 7,000 feet that was stored in these six connexes. We had taken those off of the barge to do some repairs due to damage in the barge that we had suffered in some windstorms here in Valdez. Those connexes were on shore. We immediately brought in a crane operator and began loading those connexes back on the barge.
But what's a connex?
That took time, that's correct.
With regard to that barge, you had said earlier that it was damaged in the windstorm, which as I understand it was 2 weeks earlier. Could you tell us what the damage was and why it had not been repaired? And aren't you in fact required to notify the DEC under the terms of the contingency plan when an important piece of equipment, such as the barge, is not immediately available to go out in the event of a spill?
And why there wasn't a backup?
Yeah. In our contingency plan, if a piece of equipment is going to be out of service for 3 days or more, we are required to notify the state regulators. We didn't. The reason being, please let me continue. The reason being is because all the equipment was there and right on the shoreline, if you will, and was ready to be put back on the barge.
But
the barge did work, ma'am. It's out there right now.
But it has a nice
size hole in it, but it is out there right now skimming.
So it's still got a hole in it?
Yes, sir. It sure does.
It never was repaired?
No, sir. It wasn't.
How long had you had to repair it between the time of the incident and the running aground of the...
Well, part of the problem is not just everybody can weld on a barge that is certified by the Coast Guard. So that is part of the process here is to get a certified marine... repair, company. We have been attempting to repair it for the last, 2 weeks prior to this incident.
Sir, now you're saying the problem wasn't the need to repair the barge. That wasn't what cost you time. You weren't sitting there repairing the barge.
Yes, sir.
You were spending time getting the equipment back on the barge that you had taken off because you wanted to repair it.
Yes, sir. That's correct. And then we were in the process
Could I ask you again? Are you saying that you were so absorbed in the first few hours here with the safety of the crew, the safety of the vessel, and keeping the preponderance of the oil that was still on the vessel, on that vessel, from it spilling out, that delayed in some manner your ability to go out and handle the stuff that had already spilled?
No, sir. What I'm saying is all of this was unfolding and developing as reliable information was fed to us from the scene, and simultaneously this amongst, a bunch of other things were going on at that point in time. We were working on all this concurrently.
And you told us that you didn't get stuff out there until 10 hours afterward as far as controlling the stuff that already spilled and the contingency said 5 hours. And does that mean that the contingency plan was unrealistic in your view?
I'd say, again, I know that everybody's going to go back over this and that'll be determined in that process. It took us additional time to put the equipment on the barge, to then take that off when the priority changed to a lightering operation, and then also it took additional time to dispatch lightering equipment and load those connexes back on the barge.
Lightning was a delaying factor as far as going out and getting the stuff that had already spilled?
No. Again, I'm saying those were going on concurrently. When the priorities changed for an additional second tug, because it wasn't determined at that point in time just how stable the Valdez was, again, that's when we took equipment back off the barge, put it on the Sea Flyer, and dispatched that tug.
Mr. O'Donnell, you said 7,000 feet had been unloaded from the barge. Where was the other 15,000?
Oh, the onshore. We also have a boom that is around each one of the four berths. We dispatched the 7,000 feet of boom that was in the connexes. We also at that time dispatched 7,500 feet of boom in floating hulls. It's called Vicoma CPACs. And then also we began the process of taking our boom off the berths that had no tankers at them. We began contracting with local Valdez fishing vessels, and they were the ones that took that additional boom out to the site for us. Yes, sir.
We're talking about all this mechanical equipment, right?
Yes,
sir. All these booms and skimmers and all that kind of stuff.
That's correct.
And it seems like earlier this week, it was said at least a couple of times to me, maybe I know Mr. Irasi said it at one point, and maybe you did too. We got 240,000 barrels. You can't get your arms around it physically, okay? So what difference does it make how much physical equipment, mechanical equipment you got over there?
Well, as our plan calls for, in other words, the scenario that you will find in our Prince William Sound contingency plan calls for the use of mechanical cleanup methods, it calls for the use of dispersants, and it also calls for the use of in-situ burning. At about 02:30 hours on Friday morning, we began the permit process for the use of dispersants. At that point in time, we also contacted Mr. Al Allen from SpillTech, one of the renowned experts on in-situ burning up here in Alaska. So we started all of those processes in motion, knowing full well at that point in time that we had a major release of oil in Prince William Sound, and that all these tools in the oil spill tool bag would be necessary.
And part of the tools are these pieces of paper, these permits, that you got to get somebody to sign off on.
No, sir. I mean, in other words, when we start the permit process, we're seeking their permission, and it's the bringing together the regional response team with all the federal and state representatives on there to, give us that permission.
More time it takes to get some to call up somebody to sign a piece of paper to make a request, have them look at it, sign it, say go ahead.
Yes, sir. It starts that process.
You started the permit process for the dispersant. What did that entail? Did you go to the Coast Guard person in command at that point?
Yes. In fact, it was in a conversation with the captain of the port that decision was reached once we realized how much oil. The first reports coming back from the vessel that in excess of 100,000 barrels have been released.
Was in charge of the cleanup at that point.
Yes.
And you went to the Coast Guard and you said, can we start using dispersants?
No, in conjunction with the Coast Guard, we determined that it would be necessary, again, as part of the oil spill cleanup effort here, to use all three methods, and that is a permit process that we have to make the request.
Make the request to who?
The RRT, the Regional Response Team.
And the person in charge of that team was with the Coast Guard, wasn't he?
The on-scene commander.
That's correct. The on-scene commander. So you asked.
We have to start with that process, yes, ma'am. With him.
At what time?
That was about 02:30 hours.
Mr. O'Donnell, various members of the city government here in Valdez have said that in the last 3 months they have had at least three meetings with Alyeska officials, at which, at some of those meetings at least, they have complained about drinking by crew members who come into town and then go back and board tankers. Were you familiar with these complaints, and if so, did Alyeska do anything following these complaints?
I'm not aware of any complaints, no, sir. The tanker crews go through our security checkpoint through the gate, and they're delivered via taxi directly to their respective
vessels. What happens at your security gate? What do they check for? Do they give them a say, are you drunk? Have you been drinking? Do they do anything like that? Do they test blood?
No, we check for alcohol, any kind of alcohol that the crew members are trying to take back to the tankers and things of that nature, and if we find it, we confiscate it, we destroy it.
But if a crew member came back from town drunk, would there be a way for you to check for that?
No, sir. In a situation like that, and there have been a few, before they're allowed to depart from our gate, the captain or the responsible officer from the vessel has to escort them back to the ship.
Sir, in terms of the future, I noticed that there's not much activity in the airport. I don't see a lot of semis coming into town loaded with equipment or supplies. Harbor seems quiet. What are your plans for actually manning this disaster in the near future?
Sir, we are still at the same manpower levels that we began the initiation process. We, Alyeska, okay?
Well, you may not have heard this, but we announced the number of people that we have already hired and how many we expect to hire soon.
Where have these people come from then? Because they're not hiring anyone out of job service here in town.
I hired five people today. Now, you're saying you're hiring people and you have now enough people to handle this spill?
No, we're still hiring.
Why has the Army Corps of Engineers been asked to come in and take command of this?
We have hired, let me read the numbers again.
Does Exxon have employees, 200 employees that they can pull off right now?
We have 150 Exxon employees in town.
Why not hire two more from California or wherever you work?
We are hiring the people to do the work on the beach from the local workforce.
Mr. O'Donnell,
if they don't want to work, they don't have to. We're not paying anybody off.
What are those numbers that are on the payroll again? Now,
let me find my piece of paper.
Mr. O'Donnell, is there anything you wish Alyeska had done differently now?
I made that statement Saturday. I think the people that responded to this from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, both here in Valdez and our Anchorage office, I think they did an excellent job. It was an unfortunate situation that we did have that equipment off the barge. We fully intended to repair the barge as quickly as possible and return the equipment back onto it. But I think my folks did a heck of a job. I really am proud of them. They did a lot in a short amount of time. To respond to the spill site. Then also,
security people ever confiscate alcohol or prevent a member of Exxon Valdez from boarding the ship?
That, ma'am, I don't know.
It's a little unclear to me about that security check you mentioned.
We're going to have to stop. The other group is coming in to have their press conference.
Can we get one thing straight about the security check that he mentioned?
Let me make an announcement, and then you can ask one last question. First of all, I would like to offer, if you will nominate a reporter and a photographer, I will take them personally in the helicopter, and I will show you what's going on. I do not want to leave the impression that I am not giving you the straight information. So you find one person or two, I can take about two people, a photographer and someone, a reporter, whatever the group wants to do, and I will take them, and I'll go show you some skimmers.
Would you also be willing to take a local citizen out there and show
not,
them?
Not right now, sir. I'm working a different problem right now, but I will answer your question, your earlier question.
If you're not willing to let the locals see what you're doing out there, then you're denying them the right to see for themselves that, yes, you are serious about containing this.
I have to work one problem at a time. Excuse me.
Can you address your objection, gentlemen, to ask the question? Being in charge of
the I would like that. I thought he had left. I would like
that. Any objections
from the AT, which would be somebody who would go anyway.
This gentleman will appoint the photographer and the reporter. Is that all right, everybody?
Good. Well, wait a minute. When you say photographer, what about a television photographer?
Yes.
Can you take him off the still and TV camera?
No, you'll have to hang one around one shoulder and one the other, I think. There are only three seats on this helicopter. One more second.
Is it correct that while you're saying you have employed 150 people, that those are basically oil industry experts, quote unquote, and that what this gentleman said previously, that job service in this town and the laborers local have put out less than 30 people today? You're saying that you've met this thing, and yet the evidence clearly shows that...
the evidence doesn't show anything. Now. No, that's not the evidence. The evidence is a big, tall guy in a cowboy hat and a heavy mustache. His name is Ken Dooring. He's in charge of this. You'll see him around town. He has hired 300 people. It's a Vico man. There's a Norcon man who runs another organization who has hired 100. I sent one of Mr. Dooring's people to Cordova today as a result of concerns expressed there last night to start signing up people there. Go to the job service and ask them if we're hiring people from down there. I don't have any reason to mislead you.
About an hour ago, and they said yesterday that they had hired a number of people, but that they spent 2 hours on the docks, went out there, spent 2 hours at the site doing nothing, and were taken back into town with no activity whatsoever.
Okay. That's a different issue, but I will address, I will look into that issue. What they do when they get on the payroll is something else.
Mr. Cornett, will I be able to find out before my deadline today what those people in the Glacier Queen were doing? You had told us you'd tell us this morning.
And you had someone call up.
Is it possible to find out before mid-afternoon?
I will do my very best.
How will I find that out? What do I do?
Stick with me.
Well, sir?
This gentleman right here, I promised him one more question just...
Well, I'd just like to ask you one more time. Now, you said that you've cleaned up to date 5,000 to 6,000 barrels of oil, right?
That's the estimate that I was given as a result of the phone call.
And you can call that a successful effort after 5 or 6 days?
That's just a start, sir. That is just a beginning. We are still in the early stages of one of the largest spills ever. This gentleman in the blue jacket, please.
Sir, I represent the Labor's Local 341 in Valdez here. In the last 3 days, I put out 20 people.
That's right. Working for?
Working for Norcon.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if the oil's getting picked up, but the whole time it's 5 or 6 days.
Are you saying that it's 20 instead of 100?
In the 5 or 6 days, I haven't put out no 100, sir. In the 5 or 6 days since the oil's been spilling, I've dispatched 75 people total to Norcon.
Okay, we're going to have to stop. See me after the press conference, and I will...
Why not tell us now?
There's another press conference scheduled to start right now.
Tell us.
I'll be back at 5 o'clock, or at 6 o'clock tonight.
What else? Go ahead.
This is Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center, where it is relatively pandemonious. The Exxon conferences are becoming more and more acrimonious as members of the press try to pursue questions relating to specific activities of workers, have expressed some displeasure about the quality and quantity of information being given by Exxon. Again, for listeners downstream, this is not a classic press conference. So there is no one at the door checking press credentials. The public is not barred from these meetings. And generally, about a third to half of the questions that are fired at the Exxon officials are questions fired by members of the community, either Valdez or some of the Cordovans who have been over here for these events. This is not purely a press conference, but each of these takes on something of the flavor of a town meeting as well. No real new information from the Exxon briefing, except that the Eleanor Island burn yesterday was unsuccessful. Evidently, the oil had, in that particular burn site, had made the transition through the agitation and mixing with the water, taking on the consistency of what is being referred to by the experts as a mousse, and was unable to be burned. Exxon did say they will continue to attempt controlled burns as permitting is permitted and as opportunities arise where that might be efficacious. 13 skimmers are claimed to have been in service now. Members of the press, some folks who have locals who have overflown the area, having difficulty locating 13 skimmers. Exxon offered to take a pool reporter and photographer out to identify the specific skimmers. Tonight we were promised to have a map showing where the skimmers are operating. As well, we were told that there would be pictures for people to look at to show them what indeed a skimmer looks like. Again, this has been the Exxon press conference. We're scheduled almost immediately for a conference to begin. A number of environmental groups working as a coalition have scheduled a 12 noon press conference. Given the fact that the two Exxon representatives have been unable to even leave the podium, having been descended upon by a flock or a school, I would say, of hungry reporters, about 50 of them. It may be some time before we can clear the podium and reset the stage and begin the press conference for the environmental groups. For those listeners in Valdez and Cordova, this is KCHU Valdez, public radio for Prince William Sound. For those listeners down the line, this is the Alaska Public Radio Network. We're continuing with coverage from the Valdez Civic Center Auditorium of the ongoing press briefings and conferences relating to the grounding of the tanker Exxon Valdez. employees. We will be back in a few minutes once the once we get the control again of the crowd, and the reporter group and the environmental groups will be taking the stand. The Prince William Sound Conservation Alliance, Trustees for Alaska, Earth First, Greenpeace, and the Sierra Club are listed as the sponsors of the upcoming press conference. We also have been told that PISWAC, which is a Prince William Sound mariculture, or the group that is responsible for a lot of the hatchery operation, will be involved as well. There may or may not be representatives of DEC, but we will let you know as soon as the conference gets underway just who we can expect and what we can expect. We'll take a break now and give a weather update from the KCHU studios. The weather conditions obviously very important to the cleanup activities. We'll be back on the line from the Civic Center following our weather report. I'm Dave Hammack. I want to thank KCHU volunteer Hetty Sarney and KCHU staffer Mary Beth Joyce for their assistance in this broadcast. Engineering back at KCHU studios has been James Winchester. This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.